Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour Humanoid.
When I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested. And all thumbs up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's your girl, Donnie, joined by...
Lisa. Hello, my love.
Hello, Sugar Plum. How are you?
I am well. how are you is the question. How are you?
I am the most important person here. Thank you for acknowledging that.
You are. You've got big stuff. It's almost here. It's almost book launch.
My paper baby is almost out. My friend Brooke and I, she's going to be on the podcast soon. She has a nutrition and sobriety book coming out in December, but she and I joke that all of the pre-publishing anxiety that we're experiencing, we're calling them contractions.
Like, I was just going to say, are you experiencing like fake labor or like contractions?
Yeah. I have a lot of contractions going on right now.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm okay. I will say it is just such a freaking roller coaster of emotions as you know, as one of the Quitlet OGs, publish, like, there's a significant difference between writing a book and publishing a book.
Yes.
And the publishing is, it's very stressful. I finished writing the book over a year ago. You know, I turned in the manuscript to my editor and I didn't look at my manuscript again until I recorded the audiobook a couple weeks ago. And it was a very interesting experience.
tell us. You were there for like 3 days.
It was very fancy. 3 days in a Midtown recording studio. I reached out to a couple of my voice actor friends I just asked for any tips. I was just like, what can you give this newbie? You know, like I've done some recording in the past, but not 3 days in a studio. And I talked as little as possible when I was not in the recording studio because my voice was just exhausted. I had tons of tea, tons of cough drops, and to prepare, I read through my manuscript again. I put it on my tablet, and I read my book for the first time in a year.
Oh my God. I have not read my book since it came out. Was it crazy to read it and go, this is going out in the world. I can't change it now.
That was exactly it. So as a freelance writer, I don't read things that I've published. It's just difficult for me because I want to edit. I always want to edit. Even if it's a piece that I'm really proud of that I think I did a good job on, I still want to edit. So this was tough because I hadn't looked at it in over a year. And I read through it and I made some notes of like, I read it out loud to myself, made notes of like where to take breaths, where to pause. Again, this is all guidance from fellow voice actor friends. And, that was super, super helpful to remind myself where to breathe. And I was very, like I said, I always want to edit. I was grateful that I was able to make some minor tweaks to the audio recording. I was able to like maybe use a different word here and there or things like that. Like, you can't change major structures from the book, but you can, there's a little bit of creative freedom. And I very, very much appreciated that because, like, you know, reading something with your eyes is very different than listening to something with your ears. It's like conversation versus writing. It's just a different voice. So that was interesting. But I will say I really enjoyed it. And I think you'll like this, Lisa. I think recording my audiobook actually helped me work through some of my imposter syndrome.
Oh, man, that's so great. That is so great. Unexpected benefit. I love it. I love that. And that's such a great thing to do when you're going to need to go out and present this. I mean, at the same time you're recording, well, the week after you recorded the audiobook was when you were invited onto Dan Savage. Let me say that again, Dan Savage's podcast. And, the person, out there on the front line on sex overall. I mean, who else would you go to, right? In terms of like, what a big name. And so having done that reading in the audiobook gave you more confidence going into that, because I was worried about, I knew you were going to be amazing. I knew you were going to click with him and it was all going to be fantastic. But I was worried about you getting stressed out leading up to that, because that was a big deal.
It was. And I think being on Dan Savage's show definitely helped some of my imposter syndrome, because as you know, podcasters get advanced copies of books before they have the guest on so they can read it. And so he had read my book. And so to have him quote my book while interviewing me, it was very surreal. And he was so great. And if listeners have never listened to Dan Savage's show, the structure of his show is great. Listeners like to record questions, like they record audio questions and submit them. So Dan did a submission call for sobriety and sex questions. So his producer sent me a couple questions that we're going to answer. And so I listened to the questions in advance, so I was able to prepare. And then Dan and I just tackled these questions. And it was a really great experience. And I'm also really grateful that he gave the sober sex conversation a platform, because obviously it's important to me. And I think it's just an important conversation in general, especially in the queer community. You know, Dan Savage is a very out and proud queer man, and he's been in this business for over 30 years, you know, through the AIDS epidemic of the 80s, 90s. So we were able to discuss that intersection of queerness and sobriety as well, or queerness and substance abuse, not necessarily sobriety, but that episode's going to be out soon. And it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff. And I'm taking a lot of naps.
Yeah, that's good. So I want to hear about your self-care, but I also want to hear, like, one of the things that, and we've talked about this somewhat, you know, with what's gone on with, you know, planning for your launch and all that stuff, that there are certain things that happen in this period that you just cannot control, that are just beyond your control. And those are always some of the most challenging things to deal with, you know, regardless. And I would imagine, and I'm just thinking back to when I was in your position and the book was about to come out, you know, when it's something that is such a deeply personal thing that you have been devoting so many years to, and then things happen that you just can't control, but and then while you're trying to work through the stress of that, how have you been handling that? Because there's always, you know, curveballs.
Curveballs, yes. That's a great way to put it. I am like pampering the fuck out of myself right now, Lisa.
Excellent.
I'm taking a lot of naps. I'm going to get a pedicure today.
Awesome.
I'm getting I'm getting fun. I'm splurging on really fun manicures, which I always thought were extravagant. They are. It's extravagant to get like a detailed manicure, but I'm just like, fuck it. I want to feel good about myself right now. So,
well, yeah, this is like big stuff happening.
It's big stuff happening. And there's also like, you know, I'm doing a lot of podcasts and a lot of social media promotion. So I am posing with the book a lot. So I want my nails to look good.
And let me just say, because you can't hear, you know, our listeners can't see, but she has nails that match the book cover. And they
I do.
Are fabulous.
I went to Mellow Bar. It's this popular nail salon chain in New York. And I brought my book cover in there and I was just like, can you replicate
my book cover? Loved like that.
Replicate isn't the right word. Because I didn't want an exact copy, but I was just like, I want a nail tech to look at this book cover and just like, what inspires you about my book cover, and have fun, just play. When I collaborate with another artist, I want them to have fun. I want them to play. And so she pulled from, you know, my book cover is navy. And so she mixed a bunch of different blues together to get the perfect navy shade, which I really appreciated. And on my book cover, there are two hands that are pouring out bottles of or cups of wine glasses. And the hand, like there's a pattern on the hands. And so the nail tech put the fun pattern on my nails too. So it was really fun.
So
and I
great.
Actually, I asked the nail. Yeah, thank you. And I asked the nail tech, I was just like, have other people done this? Like, this has to be a popular thing. And she said that they've had some musicians come in with their album cover or their single cover, and they want their nails to match. And apparently when Taylor Swift came through like her New York City tour, a bunch of Swifties went to Mellow Bar
to get
Taylor Swift themed nails.
I can only imagine, because they were all dressing up. So whatever era they were dressing as, oh my gosh.
Exactly. So like it's the Eras tour, so people were getting Eras nails, and I think it's fun. Nail art is really is an art, because these technicians are drawing on such small canvases.
I don't know
and
how they do it.
It's so impressive the work that they do. So all of that is a winded way of telling you that I am pampering myself and I am not feeling guilty about it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think it is, because taking care of yourself is one of the things you can't control, one of the things you can control when so much is out of your hands. Like it is, you're at the point where I don't know if anybody watched Dexter, the serial killer series on Showtime. It was like one of my very favorite shows. And there was, it's a morbid thing, the John Lithgow character was one season's villain. And when he would come, you know, he'd do something to a victim, and as they freaked out, he would just tell them, shh, it's already over. It's already over. And that's how I felt with a lot of it leading up to my life. It's like, you know what? It's already over. I did the work. I put in all the things. And now I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up as the best version of myself. So I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to, you know, really relish this time. I'm going to go get my nails done. I'm going to do things I wouldn't normally do. And, you know, this is one of the things we talk so often about, you know, giving ourselves credit for things. It's important how we tend not to do that. And we feel guilty if we celebrate ourselves in certain ways. Mm. And, you know, this is the time you really need to do that, is, you know, be like, yeah, I'm a badass. I wrote a book about, it's coming out next month, and it's about sex, dating, and relationships alcohol-free. you know, it's time. It's one of those moments in your life that you take stock of and be like, you know, give yourself all the credit you deserve because it's a lot.
That's it. I like that reminder of it's already over because like you said, everything that I can control is over. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's this like play on words there of like, it's completely out of my hands right now. So maybe yeah. I want my hands to look phenomenal with my
exactly. Cause that you can control that. That I hands can control issue my nails. You can control. The book is out of your hands, but your nails aren't.
Which reminds me, like, I guess here's our preemptive or our premature music minute is I was thinking of Hands by Jewel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
That's a good song. One.
I like that.
So,
like
okay. That. What about you? You spent a month in Santa Fe.
I've been in Santa Fe. Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on? Yeah. You're speaking.
Yeah. So I am. I've been in Santa Fe. Yeah, it's about a month. And I went recently. I do every summer. I speak at Vanderbilt Law School. I'm actually mandatory for the first years. They come a week early for orientation. And like on day two, I show up and I'm one of the programs that they need to go to. So I get a captive audience, and I don't know, it was about 200 of them, but I'm basically highlighting, you know, it's not like a scared straight sort of thing, but it's like, hey, you guys, this is exciting. You're starting law school. You're going to be, you know, going into this profession. Here's information you need to know about, you know, the prevalence of addiction and mental health issues in law school for one, and in the profession overall for two, because, you know, many of you, not necessarily you, but many of you are, you know, probably going to experience one of these things at some point in your career. And I tell them, you know, now that you're here, you guys are each other's, first line of defense. Watch out for each other. And I talk about, you know, the question of, are you okay? I tell my story too. And I'm in conversation with the assistant dean of the school who is a wonderful, wonderful guy. And, you know, we go back and forth talking about these subjects. But the fact is that you could take a perfectly well-adjusted, you know, person who's never experienced any kind of substance use or mental health disorder. And the minute you put them into law school, you have increased their risk of having a mental health or addiction problem to such a great extent that if law school were a product on a drugstore shelf, it would require a warning label. And how every law school doesn't give their new students a heads up and include this kind of talk in their orientation. I mean, they probably do something touching on mental health, but really to like have the, you know, like explain, hey, if you're struggling, we have these resources, but to really understand what the issues are, why they are, if you find yourself, you know, like say you used to drink, you know, in college, you went to the bar a couple times a week, you drank on the weekend. Now you're in law school, you're going to the bar, you know, three or four times during the week. Maybe you're having one or two more than you used to have in college, or you're starting to wake up hungover or something like that. When you have that change, you need to take a pause and say, what's going on? Why? Is it that you like hanging in the bar that much more than you did in college? Or is it that you like the taste of beer that more than you did in college? Or is it that you are trying to shut down something that's going on in your head? And you want to be, you just want to know those signs, be able to see it in yourself and be able to, you know when you see like a classmate or a friend could be, or a family or whoever could be in trouble. So that was that. And it was very, this time, the dean, he gave me this introduction that like promised hilarity. And so I felt very compelled to deliver some laugh lines, which is weird. Like, I don't, you know, not, and I do, I always try to keep the topic light because it's a very heavy topic. And, you know, the way I tell my story has a lot of dark humor in it. And I try to keep that kind of tone in all my talks. But I felt pressured. Normally, I was just rolling in. Yeah. There. I'm like, yeah, seventh year, I'm doing this. No problem. And then he's like, you know, talking about how funny it's going to be. I was like, wait, whoa.
You're like, I'm not a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But I managed to make them laugh. So I was happy. I was happy with that. But, you know, the idea that they're not upfront, and this would go for like med school, you know, MBAs, whatever. That
I think
not
just
upfront.
College in general. Like I love that this talk was mandatory to first year. And because knowing you and how you talk about recovery, it's more about mental health than drug and alcohol abuse. It's like you talk about the root issue. And for someone like you to just say like, look, you're going to get stressed out about this and this, and this stuff's going to happen. And like, it's better to deal with that now than to pretend everything's okay or take the edge off with alcohol, and just being mindful of knowing you're going into a very stressful chapter of your life and giving these young people tools on how to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And it's also a big issue for them because there have been questions when you get admitted to the bar in the different states. There have been questions. They're being removed in the states that they haven't already been removed, but asking if you've ever been treated for addiction or mental health thing. And so people don't seek treatment because they want to say no.
The stigma.
You know, the stigma. And so they were, you know, the bar was actually perpetuating that. So that's a lot of what we work against. But yeah, so I am... that's what I've been up to. And I'm going to be seeing some friends for the US Open. And I'm going to be coming to New York to see my Tawny when the book goes. Yeah, we can't wait. Can't wait. It feels like it's so long this time.
I know.
Even though
I've seen you twice this year already.
Yeah, I just saw you in May. June. I saw you in June, and it feels
in June.
Forever. That's when,
and January. Yeah. And so we've seen each other. Yeah. We went 3 years without seeing each other,
yes,
and then we'll see each other three
insane.
Times this
yeah.
year. And yeah. you know, and hopefully I can get an LA spot on the
I'm
book
there.
Tour as well.
I'm there. LA is
so
your lady. You got to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's wild,
Tawny. You are on Recovery Rocks. what have you been listening to? Let's talk music.
What's been
supporting your mental health and your sobriety through this?
Well, you know, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. So before I go to audiobooks, I'm going to say I'm very into Queen Herbie right now. I've sent you a couple of her videos on
yeah.
Instagram. She is like a pop hip hop artist, but she talks about she's very like kind of like woo woo and
yeah.
talks about
yeah.
like
yeah.
I said she had that song about tarot cards and
yes yes
I that I'm so I'm listening to Queen Herbie, but also just on Spotify like Queen Herbie Radio, and it's a lot of like just female empowerment, fun,
good
pop music, with like a hip hop edge to it that I really like. And as always, you know, like when I write, I listen to instrumental music. I cannot listen
right.
to lyrics. So,
yeah.
you know, when I work on, you know, the weekly newsletter that I write, it's a weekly advice column. Weekly advice
column. You can sign up in the show notes.
Yes, yes. People submit questions to me about sober sex and dating. So I have a free advice column every week. And when I work on that, I have my noise canceling headphones on, and I'm usually listening to the Stranger Things score.
Because
I also listened to the Stranger Things score while I was writing my book. That was like, that was my number one Spotify most listened of 2022 was because I wrote, that's when I wrote my book.
It displaced Bo Burnham.
I know. And honestly, so it's funny you say that, because lately when I've been very stressed out and life is out of my hands, a lot of the times I have been revisiting Inside, because he just, as we've said 100 times on this podcast, the way he talks about mental health and creativity with comedy, it just, it is so, I would even say medicinal. Like, I literally feel better. I laugh and I feel better after listening to someone singing about anxiety, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's cathartic to let that out with someone else who's singing about it. Totally. Yeah.
What about you? What have you been rocking out to this summer?
Well, it's funny. Like, I have, I've been going back and forth while I'm out here on SiriusXM between the Grateful Dead station, the Tom Petty station, and the Springsteen station. I've gotten back into some of my early Springsteen roots, and poor Craig has to listen to me as I will sing, you know, like these, when he, some of the, his early music was really like fast lyrics and a whole jumble, you know, like he wrote Blinded by the Light, and I'll do the whole thing. So that's been fun. And I have to say, I was going to Nashville, and there was an article just before in the New Yorker about Nashville and how politics has really changed so much there, and how it's such a difficult topic. And I was just interested. One of the podcasts I listen to is a podcast that comes out on Sundays, and it's a sub of one of the political podcasts I listen to. But it was an interview actually with Amanda Shires, Jason Isbell's wife. Jason Isbell, you know, they are so open about his addiction, her supporting his recovery, all their public struggles. And I just found it. I'm like, I don't listen to country music, but I'm like, do I need to start listening to Jason Isbell? I don't know. I like them, you know, personally so much.
You know who loves Jason Isbell is Laura McCowan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She writes about his lyrics a lot in her newsletter, and she posts about him a lot. And I've not listened to him much. I know a few of his songs, but I don't know. Maybe this fall we get into Jason Isbell.
I know. I was wondering, like, would I get into it? But I'm not sure. So that's been my soundtrack. And, you know, it's been a busy summer.
It has been a busy summer. Wait, real quick, before we hop off, I have a Bruce Springsteen anecdote for you.
Oh, please.
Before he was Bruce, you know, before he was the boss, he hit on Nick, my partner. He hit on Nick's mom at a bar.
Oh my God. And,
yeah. And this was, I don't know if she was already married. No, it must have been when she was, no, it must have been way before, because he's been around since like the 60s. 70s. Yeah. So, yeah, he hit on Janet, and that's Janet turned iconic. Him down.
That's iconic.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I grew up in Jersey. So, you know, by the time I was 12 years old, I was mad. I had an older cousin who was totally into Springsteen. She was like 16 years old when I was like 12 or something. She was 17. So she had all the albums, and I worshiped her. I worshiped Springsteen. So, but I'm an early Springsteen person. First four albums, and then I get a little lost. So,
He's also someone that I've not dove into his full catalog. I know a lot of his music, and
you should watch the HBO thing of what he did on Broadway. I saw him on Broadway, But oh, nice. You know, he had that one man show on Broadway and it's on HBO. Yeah. You would love it. You would love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah.
So I will, so I will watch that.
All right, my dear, I'm going to let you get back to your world conquering, total world domination. And
amazing.
Thanks everybody for listening. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.